All right, it's Monday night on the Fan. Pregame Ailish and Justin here up on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. If you are awaking from a weird slumber and you missed all of today's news, yes, a big William Nylander news day. We will get into all of that with Jeff Merrick Monday in about 2 or 3 minutes. Obviously, William Nylander signing the richest contract in Leafs history today. 8 years, $11.5 million. We'll get through all that and the implications moving forward with Jeff. Look around the network tonight. We've got the 94 Stanley Cup rematch with the Rangers and the Canucks, both at the top of their conferences. That's on 7 p.m. at Sportsnet, of course. We'll chat with Thomas Drantz at 6:40 ahead of puck drop at MSG. We've got Fred Van Vliet and Kyle Lowry going head-to-head at 7:30 tonight on Sportsnet 1, and then Suns and Clippers to follow the late game at 10:30. And we're going to mix in a little NFL look ahead with playoff matchup set and some best bets at the end of the show. Lots going on in our 1 hour jam-packed Fan pregame. We have a couple seconds here before Merrick joins us. Your very first thought in 30 seconds on William Nylander signing today.
Ooh, that's not really that fair because we've had so long to think about this, right? But I guess today something I was thinking about was, hey, do the Maple Leafs have a new hierarchy? Is it possible that William Nylander has leapfrogged Mitch Marner in terms of the internal hierarchy or importance hierarchy as it comes to the, or as it pertains to the Maple Leafs? And I don't think that's without like some reason. Like I think that would be actually fine if they went about it that way, because William Nylander is about to have the 100-point season that Mitch Marner has not had. Nylander doesn't play with Austin Matthews, and Nylander performs in the playoffs, I think, a little bit better than Mitch Marner. So if he has leapfrogged him and he's getting paid because, yeah, that's where he is in terms of importance with the Maple Leafs, well, I think there's some logic there in terms of the money and the guaranteed years that the Toronto Maple Leafs committed to him today.
You can ask our first guest, Jeff Merrick Monday, that exact question. Jeff, appreciate you jumping on. Busy day for you. I was listening to you earlier on, breaking down everything with William Nylander's contract. We just had Willie on with Kipper and Bourne. So there's lots of angles to take. But I really like what Justin was saying. Maybe a different hierarchy being set.
Yeah, so we all understand that, you know, Austin Matthews gets what Austin Matthews wants. And that was the more important negotiation, because they could have started either July 1 and got William Nylander done first if they wanted to. But we know this team is Austin Matthews to a certain extent. But is it possible that the next person, in terms of importance, by not just because he was next in line, but because of the term and the dollars given to him today in William Nylander, is the second most important Toronto Maple Leaf moving forward?
I know that it feels that way right now, and I think a lot of the evidence points at that right now. I mean, I don't know that we can say definitively yet until we see what happens on July 1st with Mitch Marner. And there's a couple of things to consider here. One, I mean, it's a salary cap universe, and there's only so many dollars to go around here. But I have a hard time saying that, you know, now we look at Mitch Marner sort of in a vacuum and on his own. I still wonder what happens with John Tavares. His contract will expire at the same time that Marner's does, and I don't think anyone expects, you know, John Tavares to have a $10 or $11 million contract the next time around. But I think in an ideal world, and if you're Brad Treliving, and actually Treliving said this a number of times this afternoon in his press scrum about the Nylander contract, you know, when you have good players, you try to get them under contract. I think it's going to come down to what Marner wants, what Marner expects. And let's not forget here that, you know, much like William Nylander, you know, next year is going to be the expiring year on the Mitch Marner contract. In a lot of ways, he's in control here. But having said that, complicating all of it, I suppose, is, you know, this is new management for the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is Brad Treliving, I think, starting to put his signature on the team. You know, the Matthews deal is done. The Nylander deal is done. I think it's going to come down to what Mitch Marner wants, what Mitch Marner expects, and then you go from there. So I don't know that I'm quite ready to say all of a sudden William Nylander is more important than Mitch Marner. I mean, it feels like it on a day like this, but, you know, the Maple Leafs haven't, you know, don't have the ability yet to even approach Mitch Marner about a deal. We're not talking about that until July.
Okay, so William Nylander, $92 million. He's going to be the longest tenured Leaf at this point. But the reoccurring theme with these big contracts is that no superstar has taken less to play for Toronto. Whether they say they love the city, and it seems like they really do, and they want to spend their career here, they haven't, you know, helped the pocket change too much with those decisions. I think Leaf fans are a little bit frustrated, or at least having mixed feelings on how to fit another monster contract under the books. And if you punt the decisions moving forward with Marner and Tavares, you can't really expect them to want to take less money, right? Nobody has set that precedent. Why is that the way the Maple Leafs function? Because there's a lot of other teams that don't function the same way.
Yeah, that happened. Although I'll tell you what, Ailish, what I really feel now is, you know, with this new generation of athlete, I think the idea or the old ways of I'm going to take a couple of million dollars less, I'm going to take one for the team, this is going to be a team friendly discount, etc. I can't see that happening in the NHL any longer with the new breed of athlete. Just knowing how. You know, I think this is going to be much closer to how NBA players see their contracts. Like, I'm not going to worry about anybody else. I'm not going to worry about anybody else's business. I'm just going to take care of my business here. I really think that we're on, you know, the beginnings of the end of any player really looking at this and saying, yeah, I'm going to take a little bit less, like Connor McDavid did, to leave more space for Leon Draisaitl to start to sign his contract with the Edmonton Oilers. I really think this is an indication, I think, not just of what's going to happen with and what already has happened with the Maple Leafs, but I think this is going to be a trend more and more in the NHL. I think we can expect players to say, listen, when teams have the hammer, they use it. And when players have the hammer, traditionally we haven't used it, but we need to start thinking that way now. And I think we'll see that a lot more with the younger athletes in the game.
So we wouldn't be quibbling over a couple extra $100,000 or millions of dollars if it weren't for a good reason. And that good reason is that it complicates matters. Every dollar spent is a dollar that you can't spend anywhere else. So looking at this deal, 11 and a half or 8 years, I mean, it is there. It is not going anywhere. What do you see as the primary complication? Is it the next season? Is it next season where all the cap increase just goes to William Nylander? Is it the final seasons when he's 35 years old? Or we might go back to Marner here. Is it the Marner negotiation where it's like, okay, the price is 11.5 for Nylander. What does that make for the next group of superstars that we were kind of just mentioning?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think that there's two. I mean, it's going to be, you know, one more year, even though the cap is going up a little bit next season. I think it's going to be one more year of, you know, some cap massaging here for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then the other big decision is, you know, what do we do with the Marner ask if you're Brad Treliving and Brendan Shanahan? Like, you know, would it surprise anybody if Mitch Marner went in and asked for 13? And if he does, where do you go from there if you're Brad Treliving? So I think there are two things that we're looking at here. I think next year is going to be tricky. And I think that, you know, what the Marner ask is going to be a real, real interesting bit of stick handling. And if I can go back to the previous question, one more thing that I want to add to it is I've always understood Nylander's point. You know, Nylander's point has always been, no one's been asked to take a discount. Why should I be the only one here that's expected to take a discount? And I think rightfully, he can make the argument that his last contract was a discount with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I just want to throw that in for a little more context on my last answer. I feel guilty I didn't give you a decent enough answer. How about that?
We're talking to Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and the 32 Thoughts podcast, of course. All right, so there's some speculation or at least a discussion about maybe Nylander's contract was going to be less in the summer, and if they had just signed it, you know, maybe things would have been a little bit nicer come this season the way he's performing. Any truth to that or any understanding to when this was signed and when this number was really agreed upon?
I think this has been in and around the number that the Nylander camp has wanted from pretty much day one. And, you know, Brad Treliving was asked about this as well. And, you know, without coming out and, you know, talking about the specifics of the deal, pretty much said, like, yeah, this wouldn't have been cheaper for the Maple Leafs in the offseason. Like, yeah, you have to understand a couple of things here. A lot of it revolves around William Nylander's father, Michael Nylander, who, when he played, he was an excellent centerman. But two, he understood his value and he wasn't going to leave a single nickel on the table. Like, no matter where he went, I mean, even there were, you know, there was that Edmonton situation where he changed his mind at the last minute too, and Edmonton thought he had the player, but there was a preferential deal somewhere else, and that's the deal that he took. Like, he very much understood the business of it from a player's point of view, and I think as much as, you know, Louis Gross, you know, as the agent for William Nylander here, really, you know, with William, drove the bus here, I think that Michael Nylander's signature is sort of all over this William Nylander deal. Like, I don't think it was an overpay based on how Nylander plays and how he's projected to play over the course of this deal. I kind of feel like it's right on the money that this is fair market value for the production and the performance that this player gives you. But make no mistake about it. Like, I don't think that there was, like, put it this way, I don't think that one side was, I don't think the Maple Leafs were thinking, wow, you know what, if we had done this in August, we could have got him at 9. I think the number was probably always around 11.5, probably even a little bit higher from Nylander's camp to begin with. But I think we're, you know, arguing over the short strokes of things here. I think that this was a number that Nylander's camp went into with, made their case for, and wouldn't come off of until the Maple Leafs finally, you know, the final touches put on this morning, said, okay, we don't want to drag this thing out anymore. Let's just get this done.
And you got to give credit to Nylander, right? I mean, if you're in the summer and you're talking about $12 million and everybody else is talking about 9.5, and then all of a sudden you start playing like a $12 million player, I mean, it is impressive that he was able to put that out in the world and then just meet his own expectations, or the expectations, I guess, of his father and camp and everything that else that goes into it.
Can I jump in on that one? Because I think that's a really excellent point here. And it really speaks to one thing as well, and that is thriving under pressure. And with that number that they submitted to the Maple Leafs in the offseason, or that number that they discussed, or the number they brought up, however we want to phrase it, that's a gutsy move, right? Like, that's a pretty healthy raise, a pretty robust raise for William Nylander. And a lot of players, after putting that number out there, would feel added pressure to live up to it. And we've seen players wilt. Right? We've seen players wilt in Toronto. We've seen coaches wilt in Toronto. We've seen managers wilt. We've seen a lot of people in this organization wilt under the pressure. And I think one of the things that gives the Maple Leafs brass confidence in knowing that this is going to be a deal that works out for everybody is he has the right temperament for Toronto, much like Austin Matthews has the right temperament for Toronto, much like Matt Sundin had the right temperament for Toronto. Like, there has to, like, you have to be able to turn your ears off if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf, because, like, listen, everyone has heard everything about William Nylander's game since he was first drafted in 2014 in Philadelphia. You know who else has heard all about William Nylander's game? William Nylander, and it doesn't bother him. Like, it is noisiest in Canada in two places: one, Toronto; two, Montreal. Specifically, if you're a Quebecois-born athlete. Those are the two noisiest places in the NHL. Matthews can turn his ears off and not have it affect him. Nylander can turn his ears off and clearly not have it affect him. And Justin, to your other point, which I think is a great one, is that he brought on more pressure to himself. He said, this is a number I think I'm worth, and I'm going to go out there and prove to you that I'm worth that. And not just on the ice as well, but he's become one of the most marketable players off the ice as well, right? And you saw what happened at the Global Series as well with the TV shows and going to the movie premieres. Like, everything was Nylander, Nylander. Like, everything came up Nylander this year. Like, that is all added. And over top of all of it, in the back of Nylander's mind is, it's a contract negotiation, and I've asked for a whopper of a number, and you got to hand it to him. I think you make a great point. You got to hand it to him. He lived up to the number that he put on the table.
I know you said that athletes in the NHL are done giving sweetheart deals or accepting sweetheart deals, and I'm not suggesting that Matthews did. In fact, he's kind of been the crusader in all this. He's spearheaded this movement in a lot of ways where it's like, no, you're going to pay me what I'm worth despite, you know, what precedent would say. But is there a reason to feel a little bit different about the Matthews deal now? I mean, if he did the Nylander thing where it's, no, 8 years maximum, get all the money right now, this team would be in a really, really tough spot. So did Matthews give something back in your mind, in your estimation now, looking back and sort of comparing what William Nylander did and what Austin Matthews did in the same window of contract negotiations?
I think Austin Matthews and his agent, Judd Moldaver, did one of the smartest things they could, and that is they're playing the short-term deal to short-term deal to short-term deal game here. And he set himself up for one more massive haul, whether it's with the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Los Angeles Kings or whomever or wherever. I think what Matthews has done here, maybe giving in a little on the number, but the key is, like, that term for him works beautifully. You know, he's still in a peak performer position and still in position to ring the bell. I mean, he wanted something different out of that negotiation that Nylander did. I mean, Nylander wanted, like, the long-term deal. Like, this is the career deal. This is a set up your family forever deal. That's where Nylander and his family were at with his deal. Matthews still wants to play the, I'm going to do a short-term deal, and by the time this deal is up, the cap will have risen by X amount of millions of dollars, and I'm going to set myself up for another opportunity to ring the bell one more time. So it's kind of tricky to compare the two.
Lots of great Nylander chat and discussion on our network today, but we want to chat about Canucks-Rangers later on Monday Night Hockey, of course, 7 p.m. It's a heavyweight showdown, both teams at the top of their conferences, but which team for you is best constructed right now for a lengthy playoff run, if that be in the cards?
Wow, that is a heck of a question. Can I cop out and say that I like them both? Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe I'll handicap it this way. Set up for a long playoff run. I think it might be more difficult for Vancouver, because the teams in and around Vancouver that they'll have to play, I think, are of higher quality than the Rangers will. Again, we'll see. Like, Carolina may have something to say about that by the end here, but I think that the Vancouver Canucks, you know, play in a tougher division than the Rangers do in the Metropolitan. Like, man, you figure out the Metropolitan, Ailish. Like, I can't. I've tried. We've all tried. Justin, maybe you can sort it out for us. Who's good? Who's no good? Who's junk? Who's awesome? Who's fool's gold? Like, right now we're talking about, hey, look at the Capitals and what they did. And Pat Jordy's back, and that's going to be great, right? And watch, like, they'll go into a swoon too. What's happened with the Carolina Hurricanes goaltending? And can the New Jersey Devils stay healthy? And they just lost Hughes and Siegenthaler to go with Meyer and Hamilton. I think if we're looking for an easier path to go deeper, I think provided they're healthy and they still have some work to do, they got some key injuries that they still need to replace, most notably Filip Hedl. I'd say the Rangers are probably poised, and that's more just a reflection of who's around them than Vancouver. Like, Vancouver's going to have some tough opponents here. Is not going to be any, like, anytime you're, like, right next door, anytime you're, like, saddled up right next to the defending Stanley Cup champions, who are absolute murderers in the Vegas Golden Knights, you have to look at that and say, this is not going to be an easy road to get deep.
I like when Jeff admits that he doesn't know something, because deep down you did know. You knew all the answers, Jeff, as always. But we appreciate your time.
You haven't learned my trick yet. I just keep talking until I talk myself into an answer.
Smart. That's
it's like
the way to do
it. That's all it. Mr. Smith goes to Washington. I'm just Jimmy Stewart.
That one's over my head, so...
I'm old. Old reference.
There you go. Well, we'll chat with you next week, Jeff. Appreciate your time, and enjoy your week.
Awesome. Thanks, you too. Have a good week.
Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Lots of great William Nylander breakdown from, I guess, noon onwards today. It happened around, like, what, 10? JD got some on his show.
Yeah,
I was just trying to think.
Even earlier?
He got it in there. Then we got Merrick. Then we had Kipper and Bourne. They had William Nylander on their show today.
And I had my 30 seconds,
you
so
did.
I want to ask you your initial reaction, your concern, your question,
sure,
whatever it may be, the first thing that pops in your mind when you finally saw William Nylander, 8 years, 11 and a half.
I'm going to go from the optimist fan, as I am at times, and
what
say,
a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes we're a bit opposites in our perspective, but it's a homegrown kid that wants to be with the Maple Leafs forever, as he said, even today, you know, I'd love to win a cup and retire here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hyperbole, but that's how he said it. He's taken a lot of flack from this fan base at times. He's just quietly gotten better and better throughout his career. He bet on himself in a contract year, and he delivered. Like, he has delivered to the standard that you got to pay the guy or someone else will. I can understand a segment of the fan base, though, that is frustrated with the lack of hometown discounts again and again, but Merrick brought it up as well. Like, why would he be the one that takes it, right? His last contract looked like it aged really well in favor for the
Maple
Leafs.
You'd have to take it twice.
You'd have to take it twice. And if nobody before you has set that precedent, why would you? Hard cap world that we live in, like, that's a whole nother discussion for another time. But, and the Leafs are living in the worst of it. Like, they have set themselves up to be in this issue with past mistakes and current ones. But if you were to say Willie Nylander signs a contract to stay here as a Maple Leaf or moves on somewhere else, I'm happy to have him as a Maple Leaf. But with all this said, the Willie that we're seeing this year and the Willie we saw at the end of last year has to be the William Nylander you see from now on, because that is a monster number. I do believe that there are always some incentives when it's a contract year. You want to make money. Okay, that doesn't go away, though. That has to be William Nylander for the next X amount of years of his contract, right? He's going to be a force to be reckoned with every time he plays for the rest of this season, I believe. And it's like, okay, what do you do when you're your 28th year, 29, 30, 31? Like, this is a long time of William Nylander. But, yeah, my perspective was I'm pumped. I really like Willie. I think he's a very dynamic player to watch. I like that he's a little different. He's a cool cat. Just got to deliver on this, because if not, it's going to be real tough in the city.
Yeah, I think for sure there'll be a year, a stretch of time, whatever, where it's not going to be as favorable for William Nylander. Mm-hmm. Like, you set yourself up here when you're earning this much money to have not a fall from grace, but at least a period where you're not getting that grace.
I mean, it's pretty rare for anyone to not have that.
Yeah, and I think the exceptions are, well, I think Austin Matthews is probably the exception to that. Mm. Because even in a down year last year, I think he got the benefit of the doubt with a lot of people talking about, hey, there must be an injury happening, because how could this 60-goal scorer not be as good? And, of course, he's rebounded in a big way, and he's still that guy. Mm-hmm. I do think there'll be a year where it does not look so good. Mm. Maybe it's at the end. Hopefully it is at the end for the sake of the Maple Leafs. But we're talking about, like, the hierarchy thing again. And Jeff kind of said it. Who's unbothered? Austin Matthews, William Nylander. They're unbothered by being in the city, playing hockey in the city, being under the brightest microscope. And I do think that's a really important thing. As much as he's been up and down and had times where he's irked a lot of people, a lot of in sections mm-hmm. of the fan base, he plays really well in the playoffs, and he plays really well in big moments. And he has these lulls when money's not on the line and it's mm-hmm. the middle of February. And I guess those will be more noticeable now.
Definitely.
And people will talk about it and nitpick mm-hmm. it. But when you can constantly show up in big moments and you seem unbothered by things, like, I'm willing to hitch my wagon to
yep.
you. And this is a big deal, of course. And I think one of the frustrating things is, like, the reality of it being an unending process for the Maple Leafs. Mm. Like, you go back in time of when they signed these contracts, started with John Tavares, summer of 2018. Immediately, they got to sign Nylander. Then, a couple months later, they got to sign Matthews. Then the next fall, they have to sign Marner. And, like, that all adds mm-hmm. up. All of a sudden, wow, okay, a couple of years here, we got to wait till the salary cap goes up and we'll just see if we can get through.
Then now they're doing it all again.
Then yeah. a pandemic hits. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to actually take advantage of the fact that these guys were slightly underpaid for a little while, or at least as close as they'd ever be. And now you got to start this process over again, where Matthews signs and Nylander just signs and Marner's got to sign mm-hmm. again. And then you got to figure out Tavares. And before you know it, in 2028, Austin Matthews got to sign again. So it feels like the Leafs just, like, timelines didn't add up perfectly for them, where they weren't able to take advantage of having players at a certain moment in time. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to be fighting a difficult fight. But I think they're better suited with having Austin Matthews and William Nylander than not having them at all. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think if they played this difficult game with him, that he would have just been like, okay, I'll go somewhere else yep. and make sure I get the most amount of money as possible.
There's certainly a lot of unanswered questions on how this impacts the roster moving forward, which contract is Bradtree Living working on next, but that might be Marner, you know, in the back of his mind, because that's going to be a big decision in how you're going to work forward with that, how John Tavares' money is hopefully going to come off the books. But as we said, is he just going to be the captain that says, I'll take league men? Probably not. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, as a reminder, we've got Vancouver and New York on the network on Sportsnet at 7 p.m. We're going to talk to Tom Strantz in about 10 minutes. He's down at MSG. He's just checking out lineups, line rushes, make sure he's all up to date for when he calls us. So we'll get into a little bit more Canucks talk and Rangers talk in a little bit. But big week, big weekend in the NFL. We have some idea maybe of who's real and who's not, but I want to give you one quick tidbit that producer Mike showed us about the Super Bowl logo. So those people that think that, you know, things are scripted, whether the NBA, NFL, everyone's got a script, right? This is an interesting one. So over the last two Super Bowls, if you look at the Super Bowl logo, and they're very nice and colorful and 3D, both of the last two have the exact colors of the teams that matched up in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, you look at the Super Bowl logo, and it's purple and it's red. And if you're looking at maybe the two favorites to make it to the Super Bowl, could be a purple team in the Ravens, and it could be a red team in the 49ers. And if you look at last year, Eagles, Chiefs, well, yeah, the logo was green and it had some red in it. So I don't know. I'm just saying, It's third time a charm. Did they predict this? Is this going to be the Super Bowl matchup? Because look, the logo's already ready.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, first of all, this is like the A-list story of all A-list stories. Like there's something spooky about this.
And it is a bit spooky.
And you're right. All we need to do is see the chalk hold. We just need to see the one seeds move on to the Super Bowl, win two games each. And we've got the perfect color-coded Super Bowl logo once
again. The merch will sell itself.
But, I think this is the strongest case for it. Like, I mean, the Rams and Bengals were, yeah. The Bengals maybe a bit of an upset to get there.
But that was an orange logo.
I guess it was chalky, though, with Philadelphia and Kansas City. Like, when do they make these logos?
Before the season.
Yeah?
They might already have next year's open.
Okay.
Mike will check for us.
That's important.
This wasn't
context,
made during the year.
Because if they just made this logo like a month ago.
No.
They could have been like, oh, Baltimore and San Francisco.
This thing was made before the season.
There's something. I'm going to have to check out the logo for next year.
Okay, so you believe a little bit of it.
While we're preparing for the 2024 NFL season. But yeah, I'm definitely buying into this because the Ravens and 49ers look like they're on a collision course here. Do they not?
Mm-hmm.
They both are in the number one seeds. San Francisco only 12-5. A little bit surprising. Like, it felt like they were better than a 12-5 seed. But I'm looking around at other teams and these matchups that we're going to see on Super Wildcard Weekend, which I always love saying. Like, I can't pull one team out and say, yeah, that's the team that has a chance to beat either the Ravens and 49ers. It just seems like it's very mid. It's going to be a mid-off weekend. And even the Bills, who you know I'm invested
in,
like, I'm just watching them last night, and it's like error after error.
Oh, yeah.
Step
they
on
would
a rake
have to
here,
play
step
a perfect
on a rake there.
Football game to
and
beat the
I don't
Ravens.
Even think so. Like, yes, I agree. I do agree with that. But, like, to be at their best or to be better than they've been, they just have to eliminate the boneheaded play.
What do you mean, like, red zone interceptions?
I don't think it's possible for them. It's like it's in their DNA. The boneheaded play is in the Bills' DNA. And I do think their most talented team that's going to be playing this weekend that has a chance of unseating one of those teams. But I just feel like it's Ravens 49ers and it's kind of set in stone.
Yeah, I feel like they have proven to be the teams that are least flawed, most complete, and they are deservingly to be the favorites to go to the end. But I think that this year we've learned like anyone can beat anybody. I mean, that's kind of all the time, but I don't know if you believe in like peaking at the right time.
But is anyone peaking at the right time?
I was going to say, remember when we thought the Eagles were going to be Super Bowl favorites or they were going to at least get themselves in the conversation? They're doing the opposite of that. They are falling off a cliff. Like, I have not a single ounce of faith in them. And, you know, you could have said something differently 10 weeks ago. So I do think that there is something about peaking and there's something about these two teams that have shown basically for the last, I don't know, 8-6 weeks that they are a force to be reckoned with. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm a Bills gal, but I just said it. Like, they have to play perfect football to do so. And I don't know if I trust that they can do that.
We might be sleeping on Patrick Mahomes just a little bit. I know it was a bad year for them. The offense looks like, you know, a shadow of it once was. But if you look at the NFC, Cowboys, they're a good team. They can't win anywhere else but Dallas. We just saw the Eagles. They're capitulating. Mm-hmm. The Lions, maybe the best option.
That would be fun.
I might actually go the Rams as the team that could potentially upset the 49ers. But if you had to choose, like, one of them to get there for one of the two one seeds to get there for sure, life dependent on whatever, like, who are you siding with? Like, who has the harder challenge to get to the Super Bowl in the color-coded Super Bowl logo that you pointed out? Is it the Ravens with the Bills?
There's no more purple teams, unfortunately.
or do you think it's someone in the NFC? Who do you have the most faith in? I know you want to say Buffalo, but outside Buffalo, you can say Buffalo if you want.
No, it's okay.
Who do you have the most faith in actually upsetting one of these
Cowboys
teams? Why is that?
I think that they'd have the best opportunity. They could pour on their offense, and they have, you know, some people on D that could make some big game-changing plays. That would be it. I think I've just also liked the story that maybe the Cowboys could do something fun. They're, I mean, a historical franchise. Sometimes it's nice to cheer for that. But I don't see any NFC team beating the Niners. Like, that's going to be – those are the teams we picked from the very beginning, and they've proven that all year long, right? So, I don't know. It's – Miami isn't scary. Texans, Steelers, that's a joke. It is a mid-off. I think you said it great, you know?
Texans, Steelers,
You know what the Chiefs are. Like, the Chiefs, you know, how long can you count out Patrick Mahomes? Like, can you count him out? Is he going to do the Mahomes thing? But that team that looks like a shell of themselves mostly this season, if you're a futures person, you're probably just very happy putting your money in two places, right? Like, is there a sprinkle option? Probably not. Like, probably not a sprinkle option you're interested in.
I am slightly intrigued by the Rams. So Matthew Stafford gets to go to Detroit, play a playoff game, never got to do it there. The Rams have impact rookies on each side of the ball, Puka Nacua breaking rookie receiving records. They got Kobe Turner that no one really knows until they started talking about who they have to vote for rookie of the year, and they didn't really have anyone to vote for. I just think the Rams have maybe that offense that can keep up with the team, similar to the Dallas Cowboys. But maybe there's more unknown defensive impact when comparing, because we all know about Micah Parsons.
Yep.
We all know about Deron Bland scoring touchdowns in, what, five consecutive games from the cornerback position. But maybe the Rams just have a bunch of guys we don't know as much, and they seem to be playing as good as any other team. If we're talking about a team that is peaking, like, the Rams are peaking, but what are they peaking at? Are they peaking at, like, a 75% level in terms of, like, a championship contender? Mm-hmm. Normally you want to be like, yeah, you're a 75% team that hits full stride.
Yes.
Maybe they started around like, yeah, we're kind of an average team, but we're peaking. We're better than we showed earlier in the year. Maybe that's them. Maybe that only gets you one victory, though, and it gets you a matchup with the 49ers where you're just, you don't even belong.
Well, this is the beauty of Super Saturday. What'd you call it again?
Super Wild Card
Super Week. Wild Card Week. We've got a big football game tonight, of course, college football. I have a question for you because producer Mike, who's just been pumping content to us today, sends over a photo of two beverages for sale at the college football game tonight, which obviously is the big one, Michigan and Washington. You have to choose between either of these. They're both $33.55.
Could you imagine?
And they both have, but they both have flakes of gold dust in them. Okay. So, I mean, you could just use a little sifter and go to your local pawn shop and maybe make a buck. Option one is Victor's Lemonade, Sky Vodka, Lemonade, Blue Curacao, and Gold Dust.
Okay, that's for the
Victor's
Michigan
Lemonade,
Wolverines, yeah.
Bow Down Blitz, Sky Vodka, Blue Curacao. I can never say that.
No, Grenadine. They're basically the same.
No, we got Grenadine and Sprite in that one.
We got Sprite versus Lemonade. That's really comes down to
it. And one has Grenadine in it. The color is either purple or it's a nice bluey yellow color.
Well, we'll talk about this in Best Bets, but I'm in, like, a very, very favorable position tonight.
Yeah, you are.
But I'm going to be cheering, I think, for Washington.
Okay.
Because I need them to keep it pretty close.
Bow Down Blitz
to have
for you.
The best possible. So, yeah, I could do Bow Down Blitzes all night, I think, but never.
I hope not.
Never at
$33.
$33. Translate that to Canadian. We're talking about, like, a $50 drink? Like, it better be better than what you listed there.
I'm just checking it out. to Canadian dollars. $44.79.
Okay.
Do you
can add the tip and make it around 50.
Did you want to do our best bets now before we get Drance on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We got a couple games on tonight that I've got my eyes on. It's quite a night in the NHL. And the poor PWHL game was postponed because of weather, so I can't even give you that.
It's taking money out of our pockets.
But what I do have, and this kind of snuck up on me, Marc-Andre Fleury tonight has the opportunity to take over second place himself on the NHL's all-time list of most winningest goaltenders, behind Martin Brodeur, of course, who racked up 691. So
wild.
If he wins tonight, it'll be his 552nd career win. He would go one above Patrick Waugh for second most in league history. The Wild are at home tonight. Fortunately, they're playing the Dallas Stars. But if you're going to be, you know, a believer of the storyline, a believer of Marc-Andre Fleury, shutouts plus 1,400. But maybe just the Wild to win. It'd be really nice for him to get his win on home ice. Did you see the end of that game the other day? Marc-Andre Fleury made this crazy diving into the net save. Like, he willed that team through it. I could see it tonight. Even if you just want the Wild to win and do this and give him his night, plus 110. And if you think things are spicy, a shutout plus 1,400.
Surefire Hall of Famer. I mean, I'm not normally the guy who's like, oh, longevity gets you into the
it
Hockey Hall of Fame.
For sure.
If you're the second most wins all time, you're automatic. And I know he's won a bunch of Stanley Cups and deserves to be there and got there on merit anyway. But yeah, that's all you need to know. Second place behind Martin Brodeur all time. I mentioned it's the Holy Grail tonight for me. Mm. The best part of betting is if you have a future that you earn equity on over the course of the year, they're in a championship game and they're the favorite. So you can hedge without really any worry of carving into your potential winnings. The perfect result for me would be Michigan to win by 5 or less, but I am picking Washington plus 5. And I'm not doing it just because I want to cover my ass just a little bit. It's because I think they have a better QB and I think they have a better coach. In a championship game, if you have the better QB and the better coach in the game of football, it usually portends good things. So I like Washington plus 5 regardless, although money is coming in on Michigan. And Monday Night Hockey, I think it's a tough spot for the Vancouver Canucks.
Big
Rangers.
Time.
-1.5 puck line, +160. I think it's a decent spot for the Rangers.
All right, you just talked to Thomas Drance, 30 minutes ago, 45 minutes ago?
More like 2 hours, but yeah, we're having fun today.
Why don't you bring him in? You guys are best friends.
All right, let's bring in Thomas Drance of Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, and of course the Athletic down there at Madison Square Garden for a big one tonight between two teams who are probably exceeding expectations each individually this year. But before we ask you about the matchup, Tom, we got to ask you about what the Nylander deal does for Elias Pettersson. Is there a reverberation in Vancouver based on the deal we saw in Toronto today?
I don't think a significant one, because the fundamental dynamic of the Pettersson sort of situation is Pettersson isn't ready, right? He indicated on a boat to Elliot Friedman back in the summer that he wanted to wait until after the season. I think there's been occasional optimism that, hey, maybe something would happen sooner, but frankly, the situation doesn't appear to have changed. Pettersson still hasn't given the club an indication that he's ready to talk just yet. And so until that changes, that's a unique situation, an individual situation, as opposed to something shaped by, you know, the Nylander comparable. What I do think, because all of these contracts for really high-end players do have some impact on all of the other ones, what I think the Nylander deal more than anything does is set an absolute floor for what a Pettersson deal would be if Pettersson decides and the Canucks can convince him to stay long-term in Vancouver. You know, I mean, it's hard to imagine that Pettersson wouldn't be able to demand more than 11-5 with a hugely favorable structure based off the fact that he plays a premium position, right? He's 2 years younger than Nylander is, and he's got an edge on him in points per game over the course of their career, and not by a little bit, right? Like, Pettersson's over a point per game for his career. Nylander's 0.86. I think in terms of having some impact, I think that's it. It sets a floor, but Pettersson's situation is ultimately unique and will be determined solely by the man wearing number 40 for the Canucks at Madison Square Garden right now as the club's on the ice for warmups.
Yeah, not a bad floor to be at, 11-5. And coming off that win on Saturday night against the Devils, you said it was pure dominance. That Lotto line back together for 60 minutes, Pettersson, Besser, and Miller. So why now? Why did they put them back together? And clearly it paid off immediately with their performance on Saturday night. Do you anticipate them going forward that for tonight's game and moving onwards?
Yeah, I mean, Rick Tocchet's been deeply non-committal, but they will play together. At least they'll start together tonight against the Rangers. And, you know, I think coming off a loss to the St. Louis Blues, in which the club only scored one goal, right? Pettersson was playing with Sam Lafferty that night, and that line didn't outshoot the opposition. That's been sort of a recurrent theme for the Canucks, right? Like, the Canucks have won a ton of games, but they haven't consistently carried play with their absolute best forwards on the ice this season. Those limitations have been hidden mostly because the team's been shooting at a hyper-efficient clip and has been able to count on excellent goaltending night in, night out. So, you know, it hasn't cost them in the standings or in the win column, but if you're watching these games closely, the team's just not generating enough, not carrying enough play, not logging enough heavy shifts with their top six on the ice. And I think in response to that loss in St. Louis and what we saw from Vancouver's top six forward group, you know, Tocchet loaded up. And it didn't just work, right? It was a sensational showing. I mean, the first period, they had a goal disallowed, but they were all over the Devils. Played the entire game, you know, 150 feet from their net. Were impossible to break out against for a Devils team that tends to get going vertically pretty well. And then in the second period, they just kind of ended it. Like, they had four goals, ultimately, as a line by the end of the night. But, you know, three goals in 5 minutes, just like withering persistence. The Devils got three goals off of non-scoring chances, like three point shot goals, and it didn't really come that close to mattering because Vancouver's edge on the shot clock in terms of territorial dominance was just so severe. That's the sort of game that this team hasn't played enough of, frankly, right? Like, that's the sort of imposing game that we just haven't seen this team manage, and it kind of has me watching tonight's game against the Rangers thinking, you know, could this Canucks team, not so dissimilar from what Winnipeg stumbled into with Vilardi, Scheifele, and Ehlers, like, could they find another gear with this top line, with this top-heavy, you know, Edmonton Oilers, Colorado Avalanche-style approach at the top end of their lineup? It's really the first time all season I've thought that, but I'm really excited to see what they look like this evening.
Yeah, chatting with Thomas Drantz ahead of Vancouver and New York, of course, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet. Okay, so if they load this top line and they go with the Lotto line and they you know, run this through, is then forward depth something that they'd be looking for at the trade deadline? Is that like the number one wish list? Did that expose that they need a couple more bodies to fill some roster spots?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to track. The Canucks have this middle six line with Teddy Bluger, Connor Garland, and Dakota Joshua. Now, they've run hot for about the past month, but really they've been their most consistent five-on-five line all season. One of the best two-way lines in hockey, frankly, since the start of the year. So, you know, I don't know that they need an upgrade on the third line or anything like that, but a top six forward, I think, has been this club's. This club understands that that's been a priority, and I think they've understood that for a while based off of, you know, again, not the results, but how it looks. Like, the fact that they're not carrying play consistently enough with their top six forwards on the ice. If the Lotto line sticks, if this is a sticky sort of deployment change that the club decides to ride with for a while, you know, I do sort of wonder if they could decide to prioritize center depth as opposed to winger depth. Their second line with a loaded top line is Pugh Suter, Ilya Mikheyev, and Andrei Kuzmenko, and they played really well, like really well against the New Jersey Devils on Saturday. But I think over the long haul, certainly if you have Stanley Cup aspirations, I think you'd hope to do better than Pugh Suter in the top six at center. So, you know, I could see that ultimately altering their priorities slightly should this club decide to really take a swing at this thing based off of what they've done to this point in the season.
It will be another Kuzmenko night, barring a late change here, which means he will avoid, I believe, it would be a six scratch in 20 games, which is not what you expect from a guy who was, you know, flirting with 40 goals. Is there hope yet for this relationship with Rick Tocchet? It has not been a match made in heaven between those two, at least with one side. is this trending toward maybe a divorce or something in season, a way that you can open up some space or some money to bring in someone? Or do you think these two sides are going to figure it out?
Yeah, there's no sugarcoating that it's not a good situation and there's frustration on both sides, right? Mm. There's a sense internally that Rick Tocchet's worked really hard on this relationship, that he's tried to make it work, and that realistically he can't compromise on how he wants this team to play, given, you know, how like hard his superstar level players, his JT Miller, Elias Pettersson tier guys, have kind of bought in to playing the complete game that this team's sort of hung its hat on all season long. So there's definitely frustration there, and there's definitely frustration on Kuzmenko's side too. He's no longer a fixture with Elias Pettersson the way he was last season at 5-on-5. His hold on a PP1 spot has been tenuous, especially as he's drawn in and out of the lineup somewhat consistently over the last few weeks. So, you know, my sense is that we're not at the point of no return yet. Kuzmenko's camp is still eager to make things work. There's been no trade requests. There's hope that he can stick in Vancouver and be part of the solution, be part of this team's continued success into the playoffs. So to this point, I don't think we've hit that breaking moment. We're not at break glass yet in terms of this relationship, but certainly something's got to give, especially if Kuzmenko can't find a way to build the trust that makes him a regular in the lineup.
It would be a small concession to make, given the impact that Rick Tocchet has had on this group. I mean, you've seen it all, obviously. You've seen this, this sample. So in your experience watching this team, talking with Rick Tocchet, in what way has he most profoundly changed the way the Canucks operate and in turn have had success?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is defensive organization, right? Like, at the end of the day, that's where this team looks the most different night to night from last year. They were truly a bleep show on a regular basis in their own end last season. It just did not look like they understood or were even able to anticipate where everyone was going shift to shift, especially on the breakout. They got bogged down constantly in their own end. They were victimized repeatedly by good forechecking teams or even just decent forechecking teams. I mean, there were nights where it was embarrassing, frankly. This year, in terms of their systemic approach to team defense, I mean, they are hard to break down. They've gotten great goaltending, which has obviously made it look maybe even a little more imposing than it has been, but it's been genuinely imposing. This is a really difficult team to manufacture offense against. They don't give up a lot of odd man stuff. They sort of win the inside on a pretty consistent basis and at both ends of the rink, and I think that's a credit to what Tocchet's been able to implement in terms of a level of sort of systemic organization throughout the lineup.
Last one, and we only got about a minute here for this answer, Thomas. You don't know the details as intimately, but Peter Laviolette's having a pretty comparable impact with the New York Rangers. What do you think's driving his success on Broadway?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's altogether that dissimilar, especially given that, you know, both coaches have a reputation for being pretty organized defense first coaches, and they both took over for players coaches, right? I mean, to me, that's the biggest analogy between the two, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's a lot of space between those two, John Tortorella and the field, in terms of the gambling markets, like the futures market for Jack Adams winner. Tocchet's a pretty significant favorite at this point, but I mean, these are the two betting favorites to win coach of the year going head to head at MSG tonight. Will be an interesting subplot to track as the night goes on.
Yeah, it's a big one. Vancouver and New York, Jack Adams at stake. And if you're lucky enough, you might see Thomas Drantz from the press box. We appreciate you coming on with us and enjoy the, what is the greatest arena? What is it? The greatest arena in the world? Yeah.
The most famous.
Most famous. I think it's the most famous arena in the world.
God, I fumbled that.
Good try, Jess.
Yeah, sneak up to the 400s and you can get your fill of me, just like Cuthbert did today.
Yeah, you got enough of you too, all right?
All right, we'll let you go, Thomas. Thanks and enjoy the game.
Cheers, boys. Bye.
That's funny.
It's Thomas Drantz of Sportsnet 650 and The Athletic.
The Jack Adams on the line tonight. And maybe, you know, a couple Stanley Cup powerhouses going head to head.
We can see that, 30 years later?
Yeah, we got a big one.
That would be quite the story.
That would be awesome. Yeah. That was the year I was born. So
there you go.
What a special
Kiprios
experience.
Wins a cup. You're born
94 is a beautiful year.
I don't know the name
year.
Of the arena.
You know the name of it. You just don't know the saying for it.
Right.
You've never been, so.
That's my excuse.
That's why. One day you'll get to go. Maybe this year. We'll celebrate something fun. All right. That was it for the Fan Pregame tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Leafs in action. And hopefully no more contracts are signed. Maybe.